Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Central Depository Services (India) Limited conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the talk mode. If you're traveling or in a crowded place, please mute and unmute your lines by pressing star and 6 on your touchtone telephone. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then 0 on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Nilesh Kittur. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Yeah, welcome to CDSL conference call. For today's call, CDSL management team is represented by Mr. Sunil Alvarez, who is the MD and CEO of CDSL Ventures Limited, Mr. Girish Amesara, who is the CFO of CDSL, and Mr. Sarup Gothi, who is Vice President of Finance. Now, I request Faizan to open the floor for discussion.
Thank you. All the lines in talk mode.
Hi. This is Nick Petrikov from Epic. Just a quick introduction. We're here with David Sino. David Sino is the portfolio manager on the strategy that's very interested in owning CDSL as part of the portfolio, and I'll let David describe the portfolio. I'm an analyst that works with him and also on other strategies that potentially could also own CDSL. Just a way of background, Epic is a long-term asset manager, equity asset manager. We invest in stocks globally. We have relatively long time horizon. We like stable, growing, cash flow generating, high return on equity businesses like yours. I'll let David introduce himself.
Good evening, I guess. Good afternoon. This is David Sino, Luke Kidd. I work on a strategy that focuses on companies with...
Sir, could you speak closer to the microphone because you're not audible?
How's that? Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. As Nick mentioned, I work on a strategy that focuses on businesses with high return on capital, sustainable moats, sustainable barriers to entry, compelling growth stories, structural growth stories, and we identified CDSL potentially as one of those types of businesses. So we hope to spend today trying to better understand your business model, how you make money, how you compete with your large competitor at NFDL, and we'd like to understand your fee structure and your cost structure as well. So maybe to begin, we can if you wouldn't mind just walking us through your fee streams. We have some idea how you make money, but we'd like to hear it from you. Maybe you could start there. Thank you.
Hi, this is Girish Amesara, CFO of CDSL. I will just run through the streams of revenue and the contribution of expenditure that CDSL have. So our income, if you understand the nature of our income are largely coming from companies which are admitted with CDSL. Okay, the securities are admitted with CDSL as a depository. So from that, we receive annual issuer charges. Second mainstream of revenue is the transaction charges that are charged by depository by CDSL as a depository to the debit transaction that happens in the demat account. Third line of our income is the KYC charges that our wholly owned subsidiary CDSL Venture Limited earns. And fourth largest revenue stream is the IPO corporate action charges. Okay. And apart from that, we have something called cash statement charges. Basically, the holding statement that we are supposed to send to the investor those are the charges that we recover from the depository participants of CDSL. And after that, in e-voting charges that we earn on doing e-AGMs, sending reminders to the shareholders and related income. So this covers, all this income stream covers almost 90% of our total operating revenue. Apart from that, there are other income which are basically ancillary related to the services that CDSL offers as a part of overall depository business. So this covers majority of our income stream. And in terms of expenditure, our expenses are largely on employee cost, technological cost, then certain costs that are mandated by our regulator, that is SEBI, Security Exchange Board of India Limited. And apart from that, there are routine business related expenditure incurred for carrying out the business smoothly. So this covers the flair of overall income and expenditure.
So if I may, maybe before we kind of move on to broader topics, just on the revenue side, we would like to understand a little bit better who is paying the corresponding fees for the annual issuer charges, for example.
I will touch upon that also. See, annual issuer charges is the main source of revenue, which is billed to the companies who admit their security. So basically, the companies who come out with equity shares or any security instrument have to, it is mandated to list their securities with the depository. So company which are listed are, majority of them are covered under annual issuer charges. Sometime in 2014 or somewhere there, the Ministry of Corporate Affairs had also, come out with regulation wherein unlisted company who wants to do a corporate action are also required to be admitted with any depository of their choice. So in India, there are two depository, NSDL and CDSL. The unlisted company has an option to listed company has an option to admit the security with any one of them. Okay. Corporate action is something, is an activity when the company wants to issue further share or they want to split or they want to basically any changes in their share capital. So these charges are paid by...
Sorry to interrupt, but is this exclusive? Let's say ICICI issues stock initially as an IPO. Do they only register on one of the depositories, and do they stay there for as long as they have to, or maybe split the IPO versus kind of the ongoing charges? What is the process?
Okay, so for all listed company has to mandatorily admit the security with both the depositories, CDSL as well as NSDL. So, in case of listed entity, they don't have a choice. They have to admit their security with the depository. In case of unlisted company, which is a smaller portion, they have a choice to admit the security with any one of them. Okay. Whenever they want to do any corporate action with respect to the securities. So that is a starting difference between these two category of companies. However, the listed company, contribution is much larger. The second most income that I said was transaction charges. These transaction charges are billed to the depository participants. Those are registered with the depository. Now, CDSL has around 600 depository participants and whenever there is an activity of a transaction in their beneficial owner account registered with such depository participants of debit in the account of the share or investor,
right,
which is beneficial owner, whenever there is a debit, there is a charge raised by CDSL on the depository participant. So depository participants makes payments to CDSL for the invoice.
And when you say debit, that means when they purchase a stock?
When they sell, anyone who is selling is supposed to make payment for transaction charge. Anyone who purchases is not levied the transaction charge. And the investor who sells the security, on that particular quantity, the transaction charge is levied.
Okay.
So
in short, we do not levy any charge on a credit of securities into the DMAT.
Yeah.
But a charge is levied for every debit which takes place in the DMAT account.
Okay. And then the IPOs, those are, I guess, you have the issuer, to your point, has to register with both depositors.
Yes.
So they will pay both depositors,
yes,
up front.
Yes.
That would be the number of allottees which are available in each of the depositories. So if in one depository there is a larger number of allottees, so the issuer would have to pay a larger amount to that the depository.
I'm sorry, pays a larger amount to where?
To the depository which has the larger number of allottees. So in the
Yes,
to investors, so say the number of allottees are large in, say, depository A, then whatever is the base charge applied by the number of allottees has to be paid to that particular depository.
Okay. And just to understand, so you're a depositor, so you're essentially the equivalent of what we call a custodian here. You retain the asset, the securities in street name the way it is here in the U.S. Is that fair?
Yeah. In India, we follow a BO level accounting. So what really happens is the certificates are collected by the participant and sent to the company, and the company subsequently cancels the physical certificate, and thereafter an electronic credit is given into the investor's account. So for all practical purposes, this database is maintained by us. We, unlike US, which follows, storage of the physical certificates and giving a credit, we do not follow that process. We follow the DMAT process or dematerialization process, where we cancel the certificate and give a credit into the investor's account.
And to the extent that there are securities lending, do you authorize that in any way, or is it up to the brokerage company that's a participant with you and you don't really have much of a participation in that transaction?
I think there are intermediaries who do securities lending and borrowing. Okay, we do not really get into that. We only provide firm to do that.
Okay. And then just moving on, then the KYC, that is a separate charge from the annual issuer charges, and it says that it's paid by the agency, but I'm not very clear who that agency is and how that transaction works.
Yeah, so we are a KYC registration agency, which is registered with SEBI, our regulator. We were the first and the largest KYC regulation agency. And basically, the way it works is for every KYC which is created in the system, we charge an amount of 20 rupees to the intermediary. And for every KYC which is created in the system and fetched by another intermediary, we charge a amount of 35 rupees to that intermediary.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's great. That's very helpful. Now, obviously, over the last couple of years, there's been significant increase in participation by retail investors, and you've benefited. I mean, it's been around the world, but certainly true for India. And you've been one of the major beneficiaries, if not the beneficiary of it. Can you talk about that trend? Obviously, the last quarter, things slowed down a little bit, actually went negative quarter-over-quarter, which makes all the sense in the world. But how do we think about that trend? And to the extent that you've had significant amount of IPOs going along with increased transactions and increased participation, how much of the increase in revenue that you've gotten over time you think is sustainable? Because all these companies, like I guess the IPO companies, they will have to continue to pay the annual issuer charges. I would imagine the transactional charges will slow down somehow, somewhat, and then the IPOs probably as well, although we had the insurance company, the life insurance company. I don't know if it's come through yet or anything, but if you can talk about the revenue trends, that would be very, very good.
See, you could really break up our business model into two. One is market-driven income and one is the non-market-driven income. So typically, market-driven income would depend on transaction income, that is the debit charges which we charge. It could be the CA, IPO, corporate action charges. And finally is the KYC, which really happens because all three are dependent on the market trend. So if we are in a bull market, you will see more transactions happening. If there is a bear market, obviously there will be less number of transactions happening. So that is really depends on how the market moves. Whereas we have non-market driven income, especially the folios, the issuer charges, the cash statements and e-voting. So I would say this is in a way, you know, you could break up the charges what we levy, and I hope to answer your question.
Yes. And I guess the reasonable thing to do would be just to take the annual issuer charges, data charges, and other revenues and kind of extrapolate forward, because these are, you know, the companies are listed, so these are very defendable kind of lines of revenue, and then we have to take a view on the rest, I guess, the IPO and transactions.
So in a way, the non-market driven income becomes a fixed income sort of thing, whereas the market driven becomes a variable income.
Right. Right. So, but then in terms of the transaction charges, maybe a broader question. I mean, we looked at the penetration in the brokers that cover you talk about the penetration within the retail space, and they're showing how the participation doubled from like about 3% into 6%. And if you compare that to more developed markets, that number is much bigger, but then if you compare it to China or other kind of more emerging markets, 6% is not too low. Do you have a view as to what that would look like? And do you have a view as to whether, you know, as the market becomes more volatile, maybe that participation goes back down to like 3%? And a lot of people kind of get burned from the volatility and kind of pull back from speculation.
We really get the statement on, you know, what the markets are going to look like. But to give you a perspective is that the number of DMAT accounts opened is about, I would say, about 6% of the population. So we've just about scratched the surface, I would say, and there could be a huge potential in terms of DMAT accounts going forward.
When you say that, what do you base that on? Why do you think that 6% could be too low over time? Do you compare yourselves to other countries or just basically within India? Why is that a fair statement?
It is a fair statement in the sense, considering the population of India and the number of accounts actually open and you see, when you say 6% have opened, about 6% have opened accounts, we are not even taking into consideration the number of duplicate accounts which have been opened, because here the Depositories Act allows an investor to open multiple accounts as well.
So within that 6%, you're saying it could be...
In the demographic population of India, there many of them are in the, 20 plus age group. So what the large trend what we've seen is many of these Gen Z guys have been actually opening accounts in the depositories.
Okay. Now, in terms of competition, it is the two depositor institutions in India. What is the likelihood that there could be others in the future? Why is this model of having two sustainable over time?
See, all along in India, we've believed in the power of two, so we've had two exchanges initially and two depositories. What it really does is India is a very vast country. It helps to reach out to the, furthermost corner of the country with the depository, DMAT and broking services. Point number two, it creates a sense of competition, so which really helps the intermediary as well as the investor to get the best possible services at the lowest possible cost.
Okay. How has so you are regulated. Can you talk about who oversees, what institutions oversee, and which charges? Are all of your charges subject to regulatory approval? And if you were to, given that you're more or less an oligopoly, two-company monopoly, what is the kind of driving factor as to what you can charge? And do you have pricing power, I guess, is kind of the other way of asking that.
Yeah, charges are highly regulated. In case we want to make any changes in our charges, we have to approach the regulator and the regulator needs to approve those charges.
And how has that worked historically? Have it been increasing, declining? Have there been different market conditions under which you had to adjust prices one way or the other?
See, so far as transaction charges are concerned, we have been on the same since 2004, I would believe so. And so far as issuer charges is concerned, every 5 years we have got from the regulator. We have approached the regulator and have revised the charges. But last 2 years, because of COVID, we have not approached the regulator as yet.
Okay. Maybe moving on to the cost side. You've experienced tremendous growth over the last couple of years on the revenue side, and your margins expanded, but not nearly as much. So that means that your cost has grown. Can you talk about the breakdown? I understand that it's people, as you said earlier, it's people cost and it's also IT. Can you break it down between the two and talk about why the increasing cost was almost as big as revenue? Not quite, but almost.
So in terms of cost structure, as I already explained, employee cost generally it increased by roughly by 10%, and basically we do a lot of things using technology. Almost everything is technology based solutions. So technology cost is something that would increase in terms of growth that we do in business. And apart from that, there are certain costs which are mandated by regulation. For example, we have to contribute 5% of our net operating profits to investor protection fund. Okay, so higher the profits, it will be higher the contribution that we will be required to make to this particular fund. apart from that, there are collection-based charges which we have to pay to SEBI and as an incentive to our depository participants. So these are all regulatory charges which keep on increasing based on the operating profit that we see an increase in it. So it is directly proportionate to our increase in the profits.
Can you talk about the incentive charges that you mentioned to the participants?
So these are SEBI, our regulator is SEBI. It is mandated that we have to pay 20% of our incremental issuer income that we earn. That 20% has to be paid to the depository participants, okay, based on a predefined formula provided by SEBI. So the rate of 2015 and the current rate, prevailing rate, is compared, and whatever is incremental revenue that we generate, 20% has to be paid as an incentive.
Okay, so you're sharing the revenue with the participants, which incentivizes them. Again, is that true for that? This is also true for NASDAQ.
Yes, it is applicable to both. In fact, all these regulatory costs are applicable to both the depositories.
So if your margin is just north of 60%, 20% of that cost is really the revenue sharing, and the other 20 or so is the actual cost that you incur. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. And so if you can talk about, so I understand the 20% and the 5% for the fund. The rest, how is your IT spend needs from here? Are they also proportionate to the revenue, or is it that you have to continuously invest in technology? If transactions were to slow down, can you slow down that part of the spend, or that has to be constantly going up?
So with respect to the technology, we have to build technology which is sustainable, and we have to incur the expense on technology irrespective of whether we earn that kind of income or not, because this is an expected by our regulator that our technology should be up and running without any kind of stoppage in the services. So we have to keep on investing into technologies to have best in class technology. So technology cost, as I said, it we have to incur it, whether we there are higher profits, it would be good to incur, but in case of bear market, we still have to incur the technological cost.
So that would suggest that your margin can shrink significantly if 10 or so percent of your cost being technology, of revenue, I guess. What would be the breakdown between people cost and technology? What's the breakdown? Like, what percent of revenue? And you're saying that that's going to be stable and or growing, so the margin would actually shrink in a bear market.
So if you follow what Sunil had initially told about market driven income and non market driven income, our endeavor is to ensure that our non market driven income covers our operational expenses, so that we are able to achieve that year on year basis till now. So if there is a bear pressure on transaction level income, to that extent it will impact our margins, but our non market driven income will cover our expenditure, and that we have witnessed in till now we have witnessed.
That's very helpful. Thank you. Now, in terms of, you've been listed for only a short period of time, and we don't have access to your longer-term financials, but what would your margin look like if you look back in a prior bear market? And I'm not sure when. I mean, obviously, the biggest one was in 2009, but after that, there were certainly a lot of volatility. So if the market draws down 10% to 20%, what happens to margins?
So if you look at initially when we started the business, we were not making much money. Okay, if you look at our old earlier periods profit and loss account, and just to give you inform, our annual reports are there on our website. If you can look at it prior to our listing, also they are there on our website.
Okay.
So if you look at those earlier period annual reports and financial statement, you will realize that initially we were not making that kind of money. But over a period of time, once we geared the operation, I think the margin that we have, we have maintained to a sustainable basis. But I will request you to have a look at it on our website.
Okay. No, I will. But if you don't mind just clarifying a little bit, Your margin profit was about 59%, I think, based on what I see. In 2017, it shrunk to 47 in 20. Now, when you're saying earlier periods, like how far back and what is different now? Is it just purely the market revenue? Was back then when you were not making money, was it also the case that your sustainable revenue, the fixed income revenue that you said, covered your fixed cost, but then there were no a lot of transactions? Is that why you are not making money? Or if you can just qualify that a little bit, it will be helpful.
So if you particular look at it 2020, in the March 2020 results, there were extraordinary item reported as an expense part. We had a statutory payment of roughly around 10 crore to be made to the statutory authorities, which was a fee on account of service tax, okay, which was pertaining to year 2009-10 onwards. There were certain litigation pending with respect to the government authority. So that crystallized and that we had to pay it in that year. Apart from that, we had also paid earlier period CSR expenditure, which was roughly around 5 crores. So if you remove this, you will find that the margins were not under pressure. This extraordinary exceptional item had put pressure on margin in that particular year.
Okay. But when you said that you were not making a lot of money in prior periods,
when the company was incorporated, I'm talking about those years. Okay.
Okay. Because initially you didn't have obviously scale or anything, but I forget what you were incorporated in which year? In 99. Okay, so that's 22 years ago. What about during the financial crisis, like in 08, 09, when volatility was very big? What was your, when did you start making like higher margins?
I'm sorry, I was not associated. I need to go back and look at those numbers and then only I can, during those period, I was not associated with CDSL. I need to go back and, find out on your question.
Okay, but your point is, I guess, going forward that we should think about your operating costs being covered by, you will make your effort to cover your operating costs with the fixed revenue and then the rest.
Yes.
But would that, I mean, I would imagine that would create a significant volatility on the margin, right? Because you will be breaking even.
Hi, this is David. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes.
Hi, this is David. I think my colleague's line has broken off. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, please. But your voice, we are not able to hear it properly. We can hear you, but we are not able to understand what you're speaking. So if you can come closer to the mic and speak, that would be best.
Okay, is that better?
Slightly better.
Okay, I'm going to see if we can get my colleague reconnected. Just take a moment.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes.
Sorry, I got cut out. I don't know what happened. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we are able to hear you.
Okay, I apologize. I don't know what happened. It just went dead. So anyways, my question was, would, as a management team, would you be comfortable with having a very volatile margin, given that you would be breaking even if there are not a lot of transactions, or doing great when there are lots of transactions? I would imagine it would be very volatile margin.
See, already explained that, in case of, volatile market, or in case of a bear market, the transaction charge is going to be, impacted. That, I guess, we will not be able to do anything about it.
Okay, thank you. Maybe in terms of your compensation and your kind of incentives as a management team, what are the goals? What is it that kind of drives your evaluation?
Can you come back on the question? I missed the in between.
Yeah, in terms of your compensation incentives, what are you compensated on? Are there certain profitability or growth or other factors that impact your compensation?
So generally, our compensation is breaked up into fixed and variable portion. Okay. Apart from that, SEBI doesn't allow us to share any kind of, basically ESOPs are restricted with respect to depository or market infrastructure institution in India. So that is ruled out. What our compensation policy provides is that we have to consider, considering the compensation of all the employees, we have to take into consideration the various factors which are again pre-decided by the regulator. So if you have a chance to look at SEBI depository participant regulation, it provides for, what are the criteria that depository has to take into consideration in framing the compensation policy for employees. So basically, we are tightly governed by regulator with respect to revenue and also on the compensation that we have to pay. Again, the compensation of senior management, the management team, okay, the variable pay has to be deferred and paid after 3 years. So 50% of the variable pay, which is declared for senior management, is paid in the year in which it is declared, and 50% is held by the company and it is paid after expiry of 3 years. And this is subject to malus and clawback provisions. So SEBI is tightly monitoring this portion as well.
Okay.
I hope I've answered your question.
Yes, you did. But the point is that you don't necessarily target any margins or return on equity or payout just because it's so volatile that it probably is difficult to link your performance to that. Is that a fair statement?
So just to give another anomaly to you, give another scenario with respect to the regulatory requirements. We are supposed to be carrying out, basically we need to have certain regulatory functions to be carried out by a regulator. Now, those regulatory team has to be deployed by the depository irrespective of whether you are making money or not. So that cost would always be there.
Yeah. Okay. Just quickly on that extraordinary charge in 2020 that was related to prior years, what was the reason behind it, and can that happen? I mean, what have you done to prevent that from happening again?
So this was pertaining to, I think, for financial year 2006 to 2010-11. When Government of India had introduced a new tax regime for the services that companies offer, okay, the taxpayers offers. It is called service tax regime, okay. So at that point in time, certain positions were taken based on, directives and circular issued by the Government of India, which were, you know, challenged by tax authority. And ultimately, that liability had crystallized and we were required to make payment. Now, you know, the good part of it was that there was an amnesty scheme which had came in 2020, okay, in 19 financial year 1920, whereby we managed to pay, I think, less than, one-fifth of what could have been the liability if we had fought it legally, okay? So that scheme provided for, paying this much amount and get the cases closed. So that keeps on happening in India with respect to legal position that someone takes. And we took that, the board took that decision that we should close this old matters and, you know, go ahead and make the payment as per the amount decided by tax authority.
Okay, so it was your tax liability for the company. It wasn't related to any custodian account?
No. That was company's tax liability.
Your company, yeah?
Yes.
Okay, and just maybe broadly in terms of your decision to list the company on the public market, there are very few custodians, I guess, out there that are pure custodians that are listed. So for us, that as investors, that's a great great proposition. But what was the reason why you listed it? Why would you like to have public shareholders?
Sorry, I could not get your question. Can you repeat it, please?
What was the reason for listing?
Yeah, CDSL became a public company in 2017. You listed it, right? What was the reason behind it?
Our parent company, which was BSE Limited at that point in time, SEBI had come out with a regulation that stock exchange can invest up to a specific limit. CDSL was a subsidiary of BSE Limited at that point in time, and BSE was holding roughly around 52% shareholding of CDSL. And SEBI had come out with a regulation whereby this shareholding had to be reduced to 26%. And based on the discussion held at that point in time, it was decided that this divestment shall be done through an OFS route, and that's how. And at that point in time, the management of CDSL also had an intention to do the listing in line with BSE, the holding company, had done the listing. So basically, this was the main reason that I guess would have been.
Thank you. Do you know if BSE wants to continue to hold 20% or do they want to exit?
There is a regulatory mandate once again come out, which will get triggered in next year, I guess, sometime around October 23. By October 23 or December 23, they have to reduce that holding up to 15%. So I guess BSE will decide as to how they want to do it.
Okay. Just very briefly, I think we have another 5 minutes or so. On the competition with NSDL, how is that done? I mean, I would imagine you really don't have to compete, but then on the other side, you like to have more individual accounts. You were very good at that. So what is the competitive dynamics between the two, and how do you compete?
Can you answer this? I don't really have any details on this.
Sorry, come again. I didn't get this question. Hello.
Okay. Yeah. So how do you compete with the other depository? How do you get participants to list with you rather than with them? What is the proposition? Like, how are you able to get people to come to you versus NSDL?
There are a lot of marketing efforts which goes behind the scenes. So we approach intermediaries well in time, and there is a lot of hand-holding we do for them to make their application as a depository participant. And thereafter, once they become a depository participant, there's a lot of hand-holding in helping them to start their operation. So what happened for us over the last couple of years is many of these fintechs have registered as a participant only of CDSL. And in the last couple of years, a bulk of these accounts have been opened by these fintechs.
Okay. And as a management team, I understand that your compensation is as you described it, but do you benefit from taking market share? Do you benefit from growing the company fast? Like, what is the incentive for you to drive that?
See, basically, as an employee, senior management employee, we strive to, achieve whatever best we can do, okay, as far as our functional area is concerned, each of us, okay. And compensation is, there are certain rules which are very strictly defined under the SEBI Act, SEBI DNP regulation. One of the, if you go through, you will find out. So, we cannot directly link the financial incentive with the work that we carry on as a senior management team. That is the fundamental I wanted to, highlight to you.
So, in a way, the way it works is whatever is the variable pay offered as a percentage to the rest of the company, it is offered to the senior management team as well.
Yes.
Okay. So it gives you some incentive to compete and get the fintechs and accounts listed on your exchange versus NSDL.
Yeah, in a way you could say that, yes.
Okay. My last question would be on the dividend. What is the policy there? Do you pay 50% of profits, and how important is that for shareholders and for you to be able to sustain that?
Yeah, our dividend policy is to make payout of 60% of profit that we make is paid off as a dividend to the shareholder. And that we will continue to do. I think in past 3 years also we have continued to do that. Earlier also we used to do it. Earlier, some portion was taken out as a dividend distribution tax. Now it is not there in India. It is paid. So it has been merged into the value of the dividend. And that's what I can say, that we will continue to pay 60% of our net profits.
Okay. Do you know if you have a lot of non-Indian shareholders, like foreign institutions like ours?
Yes.
Do you know roughly what the split, what percentage is?
So, you know, there is a requirement under the listing regulation that we have to publish our, you know, shareholding pattern and submit it to the stock exchange on a quarterly basis. So these details are available in public domain.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate your time. Do you travel? Do you come to New York at all?
Not recently.
Okay. Okay. Well, hope to speak with you in the future.
Sure.
Appreciate your time.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
So, should we conclude the conference? Mr. Nilesh Kittur?
Yeah, yeah. We can, everybody can disconnect the line.
Sure, sir. Thank you. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Central Depository Services India Limited, that concludes this conference call. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.